Beth Finn, and this is See Beth Run. In this very special episode, I'm joined by my fellow Get Out the Vote volunteers, Matthew Flashen, Crystal Cheapadam, Jack Meyer, and Greg Lyles. We have a roundtable discussion about getting out the vote, Election Day this Tuesday, and so much more.
Water is the universal solvent, but sugared Americans are particularly hard hit. This is a critical election, but with the rain forecast for Election Day, it's important to be prepared. There are many exciting ways to stay dry. You can get a discounted ride from Lyft or Uber, get a free ride from Carpool Vote, or share an umbrella with someone you love. Learn other ways to stay safe on today's See Beth Run.
Hey, here goes a brand new experiment. Thanks for joining me. Hi, I'm Beth Finn. I'm running for Philadelphia City Council at Large. Today is Sunday, November 4th, and it is 7:20 p.m. here in Philadelphia, and I'm coming to you live from our canvassing staging location in North Philly, right near Temple University. So, and I have some special guests with me today, some of my fellow volunteers on the campaign trail. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we're going to have a little roundtable discussion about why we're volunteering and canvassing and why we think it's important to vote this year. So Matt, why don't we start with you and your great PSA that you just did.
Hi, my name is Matthew Flashen. I'm the staging location director at the Progress Plaza, Pennsylvania Democrats location.
Yeah, that's okay. Where are you from?
I'm originally from the main line in Montgomery County, Ardmore, and then Wynwood. Now I live in Philadelphia in the Old Kennington neighborhood.
Great. And what generation are you from?
I'm a millennial.
Awesome.
Hi, my name is Crystal Cheapadam. I am I'm a floater, as they say, in the campaign. I have worked many things, and today I was confirmation captain, but I do other things, mostly in South Philly. I am Generation X, I think. I have lived in lots of areas of Pennsylvania, including the Poconos, and then down Philadelphia, and also in Harrisburg, and then in Virginia for a while.
And where do you live now?
I live in the deep south of Philly.
Okay, awesome.
All right, I am Jack Meyer, and I am a seventh generation Vermonter. right now I'm a student at Temple University. I am a member of Generation Z, born in the year 2000.
Our newest voters. Awesome.
Yeah. It's my first election.
That's exciting. I didn't know that. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I am Greg Lyles. I am a volunteer here in Philadelphia with the Pennsylvania Democrats. I'm a local resident of Philly. I've been here for 7 years, originally from Alabama. Like my friend Crystal, I've moved around the country, but I've spent most of my life in red state of America. So I've seen a little bit of the blue side of this country and the red side as well. And I am a Gen Xer, deep into Gen X.
And what part of Philly do you live in now?
I live in Northern Liberties.
Awesome. Okay, and I think you guys all know me. I'm Beth Finn, and I am here. I'm our turf captain and sign-in captain here in our staging location, and I live in Washington Square. We were arguing today about whether that was Society Hill or Old City or both. We don't really know, but but yeah, that's where I am in the city. And I am a Gen Xer, but I'm on the cusp, so I think they call us Xennials. But yeah, that's where we are. all right, so thanks, guys, for joining me today. This is a big experiment. I've never had a guest on my podcast. I don't know how I will be as an interviewer, but we'll try it and see. That's how the whole podcast is. We try it and we see. So my first question for each of you is why are you volunteering this year? What made it important to you to come out and volunteer so much time? Because you guys have been here with me all day, every day. And yeah, I know we're really so who wants to go first?
I can start.
All right.
So I was never really politically involved until the 2016 election. That's when I started reading up on politics. Actually started getting involved with local politics in my area, learning more about candidates and whatnot. And when I came down to come to Temple University, I was looking at different opportunities that would be available for me. So I found a fellowship at the field office right outside campus, and here I am volunteering and helping out with the campaign.
Awesome.
I have been politically active my entire life. It just
literally back in Canada.
Yes.
Yes.
See, we're live, so we're giving live updates to the regional headquarters while we record this.
Yes, everyone is back from Canada.
All our canisters are back. We didn't lose anyone. That's good.
Yeah, that's always good.
Sorry, Crystal, you were saying.
I come from a very politically active family. I always tell the story that I was dressed as a radioactive rat on an anti-nuclear war float at 6. So that was my entry. But I became involved in the 2016 election after ironically seeing Michael Flynn speak on the Republican convention floor, and it freaked me out. And then we didn't do particularly well. And so since then, I became re-engaged with the election because it's super important.
Yeah, it is.
And I like to say that, I've been volunteering for, I'd say the past two election cycles, but much like Crystal, I come from a very politically active family as well. My family, obviously being from rural central Alabama, they were very active in the 1960s. Actually, at one of the local museums in the state, there is a series of mugshots of protesters who were arrested, and all four of my grandparents have a mugshot on the wall.
Wow.
When they were arrested during, you know, just various civil rights or protest marches. So they're very proud of that. So even as, you know, you kind of move through your career, you kind of think, have I done enough? Am I actually making a real change, or am I living, you know, just, you know, for myself? So that's really one of the things that got me started. But I've also felt like if you don't make a difference or don't try, then you have no reason to complain or even discuss the system. So for me, this gives me an excuse to bitch and moan, because now as long as I'm working hard, I can complain about it or say, you know, it's great and I had a part in that.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Well, my grandmother is actually from Texas, so I understand sort of this is not really rural, but they were actually rural towns, so I understand Greg's too, because not everyone who is from DeSalle or Texan, you know, are painted the way that are presented, I guess. Yeah, they don't all wear red hats.
Correct.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think our country is far more diverse than we give it credit for, or that the media at least gives it credit for, right? It's not red versus blue, black versus white, right? It's everybody's sort of somewhere in the middle. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'll go next. So I started volunteering, probably you guys listening to my podcast have heard this story a lot, but I have always done a lot of advocacy in the brain tumor community and with women and girls in STEM. And then before the 2016 election, when then candidate Trump started talking about registering Muslims as a Jew, I said, never again has to mean something. I have to actually do something about that. I can't just say never again, right? And so I started volunteering for Hillary's campaign back then. That's where I met a lot of these people, well, Greg and Crystal anyway. And I guess I met Matt back then too. I said, I got to knock every door I can. I got to wake up after election day and not regret that I could have knocked on one more door or made one more phone call. And I didn't have that regret, but obviously I regretted the outcome of the election. So,
do we have an updated door knocking?
Oh, yeah. So, right. In past episodes, you guys may have heard that I had been challenged by Greg and Crystal to a door knocking competition. And so my personal doors are up around 1,700 right now. But we all kind of agreed that we could count the doors of the canvassers that we've been sending out over the last couple weekends as the volunteer leaders here at the staging location.
We're landlocked,
so,
by the way.
Yeah, we're landlocked. We are. It's true. And I think we all get to count those doors.
We're counting all the
footsteps. So I think we're even at like many thousands now, yeah. Because yesterday alone we sent out 2,700. We did 2,700 doors, mm-hmm. with all of our canvassers. So we're way above my goal of 2018. Just by yesterday's doors alone.
Just in one day.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
Actually, I was just looking online on Facebook, and up in the 151st district, where Attorney General Josh Shapiro is out canvassing, but they said to date they have about 7,000 doors knocked. This was as of yesterday in the 151st
district.
That's
awesome.
So
let's just get out the vote doors, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Well, look. If it comes down to who knocked the most doors, I think that the Democrats are going to win.
Absolutely.
I hope that's what it comes down to.
It's all about turnout.
It is. It's all about turnout. I agree. Okay, so Matt, as our standing location director, is still getting some last-minute numbers into regional, so he had to step away. So we'll go on to the next question, and when he comes back, we'll maybe ask him why he was volunteering this year. Okay, so my second question for you guys, tell me a story about canvassing from either this year or past year's canvassing, like a fun story or something that inspired you. Anybody got one off the top of their heads?
Yeah,
so go ahead,
Jack. Like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was out canvassing with a friend. And it was getting kind of late out. It was dark. And we were walking down the street. This big car pulls over next to us, and someone leans out the window. Are you with the Pennsylvania Democrat? Yeah, we are. Do you know how I can run for city council?
So, I don't know if we want to talk about this on this podcast.
And so this woman saw that we were canvassing with the Democrats, and she just wanted to know how she could get out and more so than vote, like most people we talk to, but actually go out and run for city council.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I ended up, right? I said, knocking on doors, I can do more than that. I can do more than I've been doing. And so I decided to run for city council at large. So you should tell her to listen to my podcast, See Beth Run, because she can learn how to run.
Yeah. In the next cycle.
Look, you know what? Come on. There is room for more than one great person. Holds. Yes.
You're absolutely right.
There's more room for more than one great person.
Competition makes you stronger.
Absolutely. So yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I've got a ton of bism, so if you want,
I know. I'll give you a bunch. Like, you sound like my grandma.
I am your grandma.
There's a lot of explaining we got to do in my family then. she would never scratch you say things like, I'm like madder than like
a wet hen,
uglier than a mud fence. My personal favorite ever.
I don't feel like a mud fence would last very long.
They're ugly though.
I can see that.
I actually have two related canvassing stories.
Yeah, go for it.
So I was canvassing last weekend in an area near my house, like Little Cambodia. And it's kind of a weird area because Cambodians, but it's also other stuff. And there's like families are now moving in there. And the first thing I found, I knocked on this woman's door, and she just looked at me, and she's like, thank you so much for knocking on my door, because nobody comes back here, because it's considered, like, a poor area of the city. And then the other thing was this guy starts following us, the last block, and we're like, oh my god, this is where we all die. but he actually, he kept, like, saying, what are you doing? Where are you going? What are you doing? And it ended up being that he just needed to know where his polling place was. He was really funny at the end. He's like, go Dems. I'm like, okay, sir. You have a nice day. It was one of the oddest experiences I've ever had canvassing, and I've been doing it for a long time. So sometimes people surprise you.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
I'd say it's not really all that interesting, but I think it was just more of a conversation where if I didn't convince the individual to completely change his mind, I think he's going to give it some serious thought. And Beth, you and I might have been out together canvassing, but it was earlier in the summer, maybe around July, and we were down right off South Street, and there was an older gentleman, probably in his late 60s and 70s, and you know, he never came out and said that he voted for this current president, but just based on the conversation, you can see that, you know, he was a likely voter, likely supporter. And he said, well, I kind of like the way things are going right now, and they're, you know, got a pretty good job, I think it's all right. And I just asked him, I said, well, you know, where are you in terms of, you know, your overall wages? I mean, yeah, the job market's doing great. But, you know, when's the last time you got a raise? He goes, actually, that's something I didn't mean to talk to my boss about. It's been a little while. I said, that's it. And I said, are you concerned about your overall health care, your coverage? I mean, you like that? He goes, yeah, all the ailments I got. You know, I'm really worried about that. So it was a case of, instead of talking very high level about, you know, this current administration and the issues and what's, you know, what the rhetoric is, and like you said, left versus right, red versus blue, we brought it down to what's exactly in front of this individual as a voter. And for him, it was about, you know, again, I need a raise, I've got bills to pay, I've got children, I've got grandchildren, and I need to make sure that I have health insurance. And he started giving some very, you know, deep thought to it, because then we brought it down to his state rep, we brought it down to his, you know, senator and to his governor. And you could see that light start to, you know, light up in his eye, and he started giving a little bit more thought to who he was going to vote for, as opposed to just going straight down, you know, the ticket. And so slowly but surely start to, you know, wear down on the guy. And I think, you know, conversations like that are really what's going to take to start, you know, bringing people over to, you know, another way of thinking, as opposed to really having such a hard line between the parties.
Yeah. I think all of us have found, especially over this past election season, all politics really are local. And if you talk to voters about the things that are really impacting their lives and what are important to them, and you really talk about, you know, are they better off in those areas now than they were 2 years ago? Most of them realize that a change is necessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people still worry about, you know, some of the basic things, how they're going to pay their bills, you know, how they're going to, you know, stay up with rent. And they know that, look, I'm one, health crisis away from being financially ruined. Quite frankly, I probably need a part-time job. It's easy to get one because, again, there are a ton of help wanted signs. But I shouldn't have to have two jobs to be able to just to pay the basics.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not living this incredible lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny that people, you know, that a lot of people come out for the presidential election because it's, you know, it's a big deal, the president, but they don't realize that these midterm elections are even more important to their day-to-day lives. And I think those are the conversations we've been having, right?
I always say that the president's not going to fix your street lamp.
Yeah, no, he's not.
Like, you always say that, and it's always funny because there have been instances where presidents will be having the town halls. Someone will say, you don't want my lights out on my street, and you're like, you know, and that's why, because someone asked me this year, like, what are you doing next year? I mean, those elections aren't important. This is council, and I looked at them, and I'm like, what? Because those are your mate, like, those guys are actually people you can go to talk about. The fact that there's a huge pothole in the middle of your street, or
your trash is not getting picked up,
you know, or through me, I have some crime in my area, and I have some people who, you know, have some addiction issues, but I want to find a better solution for that as well. So for me, actually, next year is especially important because those are the people that will actually have an absolute direct impact to your very block.
Yeah. Well, Crystal, you're hired to knock doors for me. I mean, it's a volunteer job. But.
I don't know if I can keep it. I'm older than I look.
I want you on my side. I want you knocking for me.
Well, you know, you can always come by to the Billy Dunn Women's Caucus now. Is what we're called.
So,
you know, next year we always host a petition party, which I love.
I'm in.
We get all the local people because part of the organization, the other one I'm in, they can't endorse. So we get everyone, judges and council people. And to me, I really am interested in the judges because last year was the first time I can remember in a long time where I actually knew who the judges were. Usually like, oh, they're a Democrat. And then you don't know who they end up being. You're like, who is that again? So I find that stuff. That's the one thing I've really taken away since 2016 is being engaged in not only who your president's going to be, but who your council person is going to be, who your committee person is going to be, because all that stuff, it does make a huge difference in your day-to-day life.
Yeah. You know, I haven't talked about this much on the podcast yet, but besides city council, there are actually quite a few things on the ballot next year in 2019 for Philadelphians. And they're important roles that impact people's everyday lives. At city council, the mayor will be on the ballot. Our city commissioners who govern the election, how the elections work in Philadelphia, they're on the ballot. Right, exactly. And there are going to be a number of judges on the ballot, too. And those judges are the people, you know, who are making decisions about how laws are enforced.
Well, and if you're the lucky or unlucky enough to find yourself in a courtroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that on person the wrong can side of, you know, that, you know, defendant's table. Then you really want to know who that person is.
Absolutely.
Actually right at the head of the court there.
Yeah.
And the same way it goes to a jury. You know, a lot of people want to, you know, bother me or dodge their jury, you know, duty, but that's something you really need to be very active in because you're being judged by your peers. But how, you know, what is their approach when it comes to, you know, again, these nonviolent crimes? You know, they're going to be the ones that make those decisions when it comes to, you know, a lot of these rulings or a lot of these decisions, what happens to you if you find yourself or family member find yourself convicted of a crime. And to the extent of, you know, what your sentence is going to be, those things are really key. And like you said, it's really interesting that the way they're chosen, because there are usually so many people running that most of us as voters, we just go for the top three. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them will tell you as when they're running for election, their number one goal is to be one of the top 10 names on the ballot, because they know that the odds are people are just going to walk in and go, OK, 1 through 10. And I'm good. You know absolutely nothing about the background of the individual.
So an action happened to me, though. I ran for a committee person. I was first on top.
I was last. I actually lost. I was the first on top. I came in last. And I'm okay with that because I was actually working for a candidate at the time. And so I was knocking his doors and not able to knock mine as much. But, I mean, we're going to talk about it later about why people choose not to vote.
Yeah.
But that was an eye-opening experience.
I bet it was.
And it is something that, stayed with me. And I actually, my friend who also ran with me and lost by 3 votes. Yeah, it was tough for her. It was tough for me for her, too. We have vowed that even though we didn't win, that we had to become a little more active in our own communities because there is definitely a need.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't think I've talked about this much either on the podcast. The position that your name is on in the ballot in Pennsylvania, it is determined by a random lottery. Or what?
The can.
Yeah.
The coffee can.
They actually draw your name out of a coffee can.
A coffee can.
Yeah. So it's a pretty old fashioned.
They say, I mean, weirdly enough, it's also kind of fair.
Yeah. I think, you know, random is just as good as anything else, I suppose. I don't
It's just when I heard that, I'm like, wait, huh?
But there is a strong correlation between your ballot position and whether
and your likelihood of,
and your likelihood of getting elected. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there's also some other things like legacy.
Yeah. Name recognition. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that goes to the point to where that, I think as voters need to start looking a little bit more careful and one, make sure that, you know, the candidates, be the judges or council individuals, do they look like the overall electorate? You know, so again, do we want to, you know, take a little bit of a second look of who's there? And then where do they live? Do they live in your neighborhood? Do they live in a, you know, school system similar to yours? Do they live in an area with potholes on the streets? I mean, are they going to want to address a lot of these issues? So you want to take a lot of that into consideration and do a little bit more homework before you just go to the, you know, the polls and start, you know, voting down ballot just kind of blindly because it's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, you want to learn about those candidates, sure, especially those judges, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard to learn about those judges because they are, even though they run under a party, they're not supposed to have a platform because they're judges, not, you know, I don't know, it's kind of a funny thing.
The judges are, obviously with the Muslim ban, they have been instrumental in keeping, you know, so I always tell people, like, judges are some of the most important people that you need to pay attention to. And I can't remember the name of the organization I was at, Tuesdays for Toomey event after the Kavanaugh hearings. And they this woman that came up and talked about, do you know your judicial candidates? Do you know how they go there? And I'm like, I don't think I do. So she made me go back and really take a look at who was running. And it's not always our district, but out, you know, Western Pennsylvania, especially. Because you just don't know.
Yeah, judges in Pennsylvania all up and down the courts are elected, which I think that's pretty weird, but... Well, we can get into that later some other time. okay, well, we kind of diverged from campus usage, but no, this has been a great conversation. Okay, so let's get to the heart of why I wanted to talk to you guys today. And you know, Tuesday, Election Day, is just two days away. We're almost there. It's the home stretch. And so what are the excuses you guys have heard from people for why they're not going to vote? And then I want us to kind of knock down those excuses. Jack, why don't you go first?
Well, the one I heard recently was that not necessarily that their vote doesn't matter, but they just don't care. Politics will swing the way politics swing, and they felt no need to be a part of that system.
Yeah. So I saw an infographic and a statistic lately that showed that more than 50% of people don't vote. And so if all of those people voted, they could have a real influence, right? Their voice would matter. And so the majority of people are letting a minority of people decide for them what our government's going to look like. To me, that doesn't make sense. That's what I would say to those people.
No, Michael Moore was on Lawrence O'Donnell. I think it was Friday night or something. It was one night, you know, I was watching the rerun, which comes out at like 2 a.m. That's another issue. But anyway, he was being interviewed, and he actually said that the most powerful voting bloc in the country are the non-voters. They're the ones that, you know, passively control a lot of the overall platforms by what they do or what they don't do. And most of them, again, turnout is not there, or it's a degree of apathy. And even a lot of your candidates, mainly at the national level, but they're very strategic about what they list and what they call out to either keep that block at the, you know, the stalemate that they are, because they know if you actually were to galvanize those individuals, you could pretty much swing that pendulum against you. So they're very careful about the things that they say because they don't want to stoke that fire or get that group riled up. And the last time that voting bloc was really, ignited was around 2008 when President Obama was running for office. You've got so many people that hadn't voted in years or had never voted before to go to the polls. And a lot of them haven't been back since. They didn't come back out in 2012. You know, they kind of, I want to check the box because I have the opportunity to make history. They, in their mind, made their history, and then they went back to, the status quo, business as usual. So they went home in 2012, they stayed home in 2016, and, here we are, like you said, a couple of days out, we're still, TBD to see what happens as well as in 2020. But that, that voting group that stays at home, that's the group that we've got to find. But to your point, I think you kind of nailed it, is that what they said is, they just let the system do what it will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the system is not unchangeable, right? If you look over the arc of history in the United States over 200 years, it's changed significantly, right? We don't have slavery anymore, thank goodness. Women are allowed to vote now, thank goodness. All those things have changed because people vote. And, it may not be immediate instant gratification, but the arc of history bends towards justice. That's a famous quote. But it takes people making their voices heard, I think, to make that arc bend.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I am a data nerd, so I actually looked at when voting has been the highest over the last 60 years for presidential elections, and I believe the highest, I could be misquoted, so please correct me, was Kennedy. So it was Kennedy, it was Clinton, the first one, and it was Obama. And when you look at the data, and
so what's the common thread between those?
What is the common thread? Let's think about it. They were perceived as cooler. They were younger. With Kennedy, you have to remember he was the first Catholic president to ever run. And it was fascinating. So that's the kind of stuff I looked at. And also, I went and saw Al Schmidt, city commissioner, in charge of voting data. Speech, and we talked about all of the statistics. And what I have also noticed that he talked about within voter registration is how many people are registering as independents or no party. And Democrats, Republicans, well, hopefully just Democrats, do a better job at reaching out to those people. And people who are close, especially to Jack's age, are more than registering as independent. And I have been called many things in the last, I'd say, 2 years. They call me a centrist and part of the machine because I have identified as a Democrat, but I don't perceive as being a Democrat or any. I've always perceived myself as being a pragmatist, but also a progressive as well. And I personally don't love the label, but we live in a two-party system, particularly in Philadelphia. You have to register as a Democrat or Republican in order to vote in the primaries.
Yeah. Because we have a closed primary system here. Yeah.
And I also have done research on who has closed primaries and who doesn't. And I'm sure I don't know if you all read that New Yorker article with the 12 disaffected people.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And it was infuriating, but there were some pretty solid points. Like, registering by mail is practically antiquated in this day and time. And the absentee ballot is crazy passive. I've seen it myself. I was registering voters outside the library, and the thing is ginormous, and it's really cumbersome. And I don't understand, particularly in Pennsylvania, why we don't are more like Oregon and have everyone 18
registrations.
Yeah. Automatic. Mm-hmm. So there are so many. There's gerrymandering here. There's I know we've had the case, but. You have to hold your breath. And so there are definitely obstacles. And people, especially when I was canvassing for a committee person, were constantly said to me, people come here every 2 to 4 years. They don't care except to come and get our votes, and then they don't do anything for us. And it was repeated to me over and over and over and over again. And it was such a disappointing, but I don't think they're totally wrong.
Yeah.
So that to me, and, most people that I know that are younger, even my best friend, one of them is an independent, has been an independent for a long time because she doesn't want to be identified.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think it's okay that they don't choose a party, but at the end of the day, they still have to vote, right? And, it's interesting. right here in Pennsylvania, we've had some races that are won and lost by just a few votes. Helen Tye, who's a state house rep, she won her election by like 10 votes. I mean, 10 votes. That's nothing. And so it's really important that people realize their vote does matter. In Virginia, in one of those state house races last year, it was a dead tie, and it was decided by a coin flip. I mean, votes matter. They really do matter.
I mean, Obama did not win Pennsylvania by a lot.
No, not by a lot.
Because people came out in 2008, and they're excited to vote. And then 2012, which I think happened in 2016, I'm like, oh, he had it in the bag, right? But if you look county by county, because again, Denver, it's not that many. It's not that many votes. And it's depressing. So, you know, he talked about that. I've seen him talk about it. And he's come to PA many times. Talk about like how much he almost lost by, you know?
Yeah.
So think about that.
Yeah.
Frightening.
All right. So Matt is back joining us. Are we saving the world? Are we good? Great. So Matt, we were just talking about Jack's reason he's heard for people not voting is because they don't care about the process. They think that politics is going to go how it's going to go. And I don't know. You want to add anything to that, or should we just move on to the next one and you'll jump in?
I've spoken to different people who have different reasons for not voting. For some people, it's just they're not quote unquote into it, or they just don't feel like it's their thing. Like this is where some people are into sports or into reading. They say they're not into politics, so they just don't do it because they don't feel like it's their priority. And I feel like that's a difficult problem, but the only way you can solve it is by showing people that it directly engages with their life. Like everybody pays some form of taxes, so you're giving money to these politicians, so don't you want to have some say in how your money is spent? So everyone, even if you don't care about particular issues, it's always affecting your life, and it's touching your life in some way. So I feel like it's difficult, but there are ways to relate to these people. And there's other people who feel like they're unhappy with the political system, and they feel it's rigged or unfair. For example, like they're upset with the Electoral College or different gerrymandering or different things like that. And those problems can be solved, but first you'll have to engage.
Yeah, I think that's true. So, Crystal, I think you were alluding earlier to one of the reasons you've heard about why people don't vote. What's that? Do we remember?
yeah. So I actually travel in some lefty circles, more lefty than myself.
What? I can't believe that.
I know. It's frightening, right? Someone actually said to me that they just believe that, again, to your point as well, that it's completely rigged, completely rigged. And it makes me just so sad because I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit of a hopeful optimist, not completely optimistic. So.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jack. So Jack has to leave us. Thanks for being on my podcast.
Yeah, no problem.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. In addition to the people who think it's rigged, and other people we've talked about, there's also people who just feel like, well, I voted for the Democrats last time and they didn't really deliver. Crystal has alluded to that earlier, but it also applies at the national level. Like people say like, or national level and state level, like I voted for Governor Wolf. What has he done for me? I voted for President Obama. What has he done for me? And I think first of all, we need to show these people what we have accomplished because you're never going to win them over just by like intellectual arguments. You have to show what has been accomplished, which, for example, Obama, Obamacare, the Fair Pay Act, the Clean Power Plan, and all the work on global warming. So there is a lot that has been accomplished, which some people don't necessarily know about. So you have to show them what's been accomplished. But the other side of it is people underestimate the obstacles. They feel like, well, we had a Democratic president for 8 years, or we had Democratic governor for 4 years, so he should have been able to do whatever he wanted. They don't understand, well, Obama only had like a filibuster-proof majority for, I think, 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
And he didn't even have control of Congress for a long time. And Governor Wolf has had a Republican in the state legislature the whole time, I believe.
Yeah.
So they don't understand, like, their constraints on what these people can accomplish. So it's partly, like, civics. Without a good understanding of civics, you're not going to be able to understand the way the political system works, which means you might have expectations that are not met. So it's a combination of all these things. But ultimately, we have to deliver and show people their vote matters and show them what is accomplished and help them participate and understand the system.
Yeah. So maybe more education, right?
Yeah, I think civics and civics and critical thinking are probably the most important parts of education, because most other stuff you can, in addition to obvious things like reading and math and stuff, a lot of other stuff you can learn later, like you can different forms of vocation and college education and career education. People start that later in life, go back to school to become like whatever, anything from like an electrician to software engineer. People take up that trade later in life, but you never hear about someone who goes to school when they're 40 to learn critical thinking or to learn civics.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. That people only learn that kind of thing when they have to. So we have to have that kind of stuff a key part of K-12 education.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody does. I mean, very few people go back to school at all, and they certainly aren't going to learn civics.
And there are people out there who view it as a protest to not vote. I've seen pamphlets telling people to not vote. Colin Kaepernick, for instance, said that he was not going to vote in the 2016 election because he said it was a racist system. And he's not wrong. It was disappointing to me personally. But again, I am not him. I do not know his struggle. I do not know what it's like. However, and it is disappointing, but it is true. Celebrity has a real impact on sometimes behavior. Look at Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't Taylor Swift get tons and tons of young people to register
to vote?
It does,
but it goes back to that point I was making earlier about that, you know, that apathetic or that voting block, you know, those who kind of sit back and just stay home. And I forget where I read the article, but there was this African-American, I guess, organizer, and he may have been somewhere out of, you know, the Mid-Atlantic area, but he started off as a diehard Bernie supporter, and like a lot of the Bernie supporters, you know, he didn't concede gracefully. So he was still kind of ticked off about it. And actually, he was actually sought out by a bunch of Republican operatives, and specifically those under this current president's campaign. And they went after him, and he basically was, quote unquote, duped into going out into the minority community, and specifically African-American men, and focusing on those individuals and getting them to sit out this election. You do not like Hillary. Here are the top five reasons why. Trump may be a little bit extreme for you. Sorry, I said his name.
No, this individual may be a little. He's not Voldemort. Extreme. We can say
his
name.
He's not Voldemort.
Let's not give him that Voldemort power.
But he may be a little bit too much for you. Okay, then all the better. Stay at home. Leave it alone. Leave him alone. And that was, again, it goes back to, there was a very strong and concerted effort to get this entire block of black male individuals in the electorate to actually stay home in the 2016 election. And in certain areas, I mean, he was doing like a, you know, nationwide tour. In certain areas, I mean, he was successful. We're not talking tens of thousands of individuals. But like you said, especially these counties that have low turnout, just, you know, precinct by precinct around the country. And PA was definitely called out. He went to certain areas of Texas. He went to certain areas of Illinois. But just to call out, go into those areas of these urban cities and just start, hit the barbershops, you know, you hit the church, and just have some conversations with these men who are already on the fence and already a little ticked off.
Yeah.
And just, you know, tip them over the curb and get them to stay home. I mean, it was a very strategic and a very well-planned organized effort, and it worked. But so to your point, I think that's one of the worst forms of protest that anyone can have, to say, screw it, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to, my vote or my right is going to be apathy or no ballot at all. You better find another effing way to actually get it done.
I mean, it is also the rhetoric. People are so sick. Like, people are like, don't talk to me about politics. I am done. Because it is that 24-hour news cycle.
It is, yeah.
You know, like, I am someone, you know, who I don't consider myself moderate, but I guess right now in the climate, I don't use the word deplorable.
I don't like it. My mother is gay and she lives in rural America. And for her, it is not a safe place. You know, and I, deplorable just sets people off. And they've taken that out on us. Like, we'll have Facebook fights. But on her, sometimes her life can be at stake. So I just tell everyone, like, chill out. I know we talk about the coast. And why don't we, like, why don't this both coast just do everything from the middle of the country? And like, but that's not what America was founded on. We're founded on civilized discussion. I mean, you're also found on disobedience and war and all that other stuff.
And it doesn't work that way. You can't say someone living in a community, you know, of 6 million people in a 50 square mile radius should actually speak for a state with 400,000 people in the entire state.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, you know, 10 people per capita, you know, for per square mile radius. It just does not make sense.
Also,
you can't operate that way.
I don't always agree with some of the party line. Like, I have pro-life Democratic friends, which I'm always fascinated by, but, you know, they are out there. And, you know, and for me, I think we've gotten to the place where we literally cannot have a civilized discussion. You know, I am not someone who is going to light somebody up because, like, I had a coworker tell me she didn't vote. She didn't vote, but she didn't vote for Trump or Hillary, and I'm like, oh my god, and I'm like, don't, and I didn't, I kept my mouth shut, because a year ago, I'm like, what is wrong with you, but it's like, you know what, that is her right, and that is the thing,
it is,
and if I'm trying the very best I can to be civil, it is really hard sometimes, but my grandmother was a Church of Christ minister's wife, and she taught me to have some level of decorum, and that is what is lost, but I think a lot of people, I don't even have cable. I have like basic cable, so I don't have MSNBC
Good
or Fox.
Good
and,
move.
And it makes my life so much better.
Yeah.
It makes my life, and I always tell people, like, just get it off.
And the funny thing is, you're probably more as informed, if not more informed, than those individuals, which I could be included in, who watch way too much cable TV, you know, watch way too much of the, you know, the echo chambers. Inside that, because you go in, if you stick to one cable channel, whichever side it's on, you probably only hear maybe 15-20% of the actual story or the actual news that's out there. So what do you have? You have this very, I'd like to think, you know, abbreviated view of what's happening in the world, not to mention multiple perspectives. And like you said, it's all projected. It's all opinion-based. Even during the day hours when it's supposed to be, you know, pure hard news, there's a lot of opinion that's still coming out, you know, during the core hours between 8 a.m. and, you know, 8 p.m. before the, you know, the opinion leaders come up on television. So you probably have more insight to what's actually happening as someone who actually picks up a book or paper and read.
I actually, I do run Twitter accounts, but for me, it's not to land vast, except for a certain someone. I might on occasion, say things, but not, it's not personal against this family. Like, I think that's out of control.
I told you I was sorry.
Sure.
All right. I said I'm sorry.
I apologize. I'm
right
sorry.
Out loud.
I know.
Really?
But I know.
I'm
going to
report to you. Keep that up.
I don't like that either. I feel like that has gone too far. Like, I would never insult Trump's child. Like,
right.
I think, and it is a weird era now where his, like, I can't remember the last time it was like maybe the Kennedys, you know, when there was Robert. I mean, I'm sure there's been other examples, but not that high up. And it's been really hard. But someone who goes after people's kids, I just don't. It's just for me.
Yeah, I've heard, when I've been canvassing, I've heard Democrats say, like, we need to fight back. And they don't just mean, like, if when I would respond to them saying, like, that's why I'm here knocking on doors, they would say, well, I don't just mean that we should work hard and win the next election. They actually mean, like, we should fight back in the sense of, like, stoop to the Republicans level, like, start, like, personally attacking people, getting loud, basically trying to, like, lambast people instead of focusing on the issues. And I'm totally against that philosophy, because, like, both personally and politically, I'm like, I'm about, like, civility and respect. And I think politics should be, like, the place where we try to, like, solve problems as, like, a city, a state, a nation. We have a lot of serious problems that are being neglected, because it's basically like Trump is a reactionary, and instead of like focusing on the issues that we actually have to as a country, we're just fighting off the next wave of stupidity. So like Crystal, I'm also like a moderate. I consider myself like a radical moderate, because it, radical in the sense of like how much effort I'm putting into being a moderate, but I consider myself a moderate Democrat. I'm not on the left wing of the party, but considering like how far the country is moving to the right, like that puts me to the left of the country. So people say like I didn't leave the party left me. That's how I feel about the country, because the country is moving so far to the right. So I seem like I'm on the left just because I want to have like a moderate politics and like a political discourse where we all try to solve problems together and have respectful debates.
Mm. So I have a question: is the country moving to the right or the government? Because most, if you poll most Americans, they are pro-choice. Most are pro-marriage equality. Most support legalization of marijuana. Most definitely believe in some type of prison reform, or you know, I guess the excessive amount of people in prison, you know, incarceration rates. I mean, most of those social issues that we talk about a lot, the majority of Americans, like you said, are left of center on. But those in power, for reasons we all discussed, are on the other side. So they enact a lot of the laws that are counteract everything that most of us as Americans really support. And that's, I'm just asking you, you know.
Yeah, I would argue that both the country's government is moving to the right, and because people are not paying enough attention, they're allowing the country overall to move to the right. And it's beyond just the strictly elected officials. It's including like the attacks in the media, the attacks in the judiciary. So basically, we have this like civil society that helps our government, helps our society function well. And it's not just the government. There's also like education. Like Trump says, I love the poorly educated. That's quote unquote a joke. And we have his like vicious attacks on the media, which are very intentional. So because overall basically our like the checks and balances that like kind of keeps our country like respectful and on track towards like holding people accountable and solving problems in a respectful way, those are all degrading. So basically I would say if the country is moving to the right, it's degrading and basically falling apart in its ability to actually solve problems.
I don't have a problem with the protest, though, because I don't know if you've ever seen How to Survive a Plague, which is about the HIV/AIDS crisis. I mean, that to me was radical. And the thing was funny, because I try and view America like that now. So with the HIV crisis, there were two basic wings, right? There were the activists, wing, that my favorite thing ever was when they put the giant condom on Jesse Helms's house, which I mean obviously it was an old condom, I wish, but there, and they used to, someone like showed up at George Bush's headquarters and like it was his coffin with an actual body in it, and then the other side was just a split with people that went to NIH and advocated for more. And I am fine with that. That I'm okay with. I'm not, and it is a weird thing, but the yelling for the protesting is one thing, you know, people, you know, protesting during the hearings, people laying down in the Capitol. I have no, because I think that is where our country has been founded on.
Yes.
But not being able to have Thanksgiving dinner, that is the issue I have. And it's like, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, the thing, Reagan and Tip O'Neill would have a drink after ends of sessions sometimes because they could. And there was a story like last year about this guy, he was a congressperson, I think in Florida. And there was a guy here, the guy, he was a Democrat, and the guy down south was a Republican, and they were new congresspeople, and they started having lunch together, and they would get dirty looks, especially from the GOP. Like, why are you having lunch together? And like, 'cause we went to West Point together. Like, that's the kind of crap. It makes me upset. Like, even amongst the four of us, we might have some differences in what we think is too radical, not radical enough, but we can sit down and have a conversation. And also, like, people are like, well, Nazis are okay. No. They're not neo-Nazis. They're not white supremacists. They're just Nazis. And it is such a strange thing to have, like, try and be civil, but also have to take bunch of garbage thoughts from people that are like, no, they're free speech. I'm like, So I've had a lot of these like really hard discussions to do with my own family, and it is a very fractured. I just want to be able to have a holiday meal and not have to erupt, you know, or not have people throw things at each other or whatever it is. So, and it's happened.
Yeah, just to clarify, like, I'm not, like, against activism. Like, I think we can have, like, a healthy civil society and healthy debate and still have activism. In fact, I think, like, if you look at, like, most of the successful civil rights movements, there's usually been, like, an aggressive wing and then, like, the write letters and have speeches wing.
Yeah.
That's pretty much, like, the American Civil Rights Movement, South Africa, pretty much every civil rights movement, there's, like, two wings. And because of that dynamic tension, it then resolves and, like, in moving the civil rights forward. And I think you need to have both. But there's a difference. Like, in the civil rights movement, you didn't have, like, Martin Luther King saying, like, we should ban, like, white people's newspapers and say, like, they're like, newspapers are enemies of people. They just said, like, we want our civil rights and we're going to go to this lunch counter and sit here until you stop discriminating against us.
Right.
They didn't say, like, we're going to ban the other side. So there's definitely a difference between, like, you can be an activist and get on the front page from your activism without tearing down civil society.
Yeah. I think that every great sea change in our nation's history and probably in the world's history has required actions on both changing the system from inside and from the outside. You have to have both halves of it. And I think that's crucial. Yeah. But I think, Krista, you were talking about, I don't remember exactly, but I think the way that we make sure that discourse remains civilized is that we have to actually have respect for the person on the other side of the aisle or the table or whatever, right? And if we are forgetting that those people are other human beings as well, you know, that we all have that in common, I think that's where the divide gets terrible and maybe insurmountable. We have to remember that all of us are people, are human
social
beings
media
first. Yeah.
And texting, we're all very disconnected.
It's
now.
Too easy to forget that we're all human beings.
And you just, right now everyone like hunkers down with people who believe exactly what they believe in. And so it's interesting. I have noticed when I have a disagreement, it's almost always with white leftist men, I get called part of the establishment, which I guess is it's like the deplorable, I guess. So I was like, all right. And then I've also been called a communist. So I'm just like, I guess I'm doing something right. Because, you know, and I've been called worse. I've been called other names that are not nice. But it's okay. You know, but I just think about, I call it the all caps revolution, where it's just like, I'm like, you gotta stop. Like, there are things. I have a friend who's much more white than myself. The thing about it is, I don't engage her with it. I just unfollow her. But I'm not. We've been friends since college. Like, she's the same person. We just don't have the same political views. And she's not. And I know her. She's not someone who's all of a sudden is like, yeah, let's go ahead and like deport a bunch of Mexicans. Like, that's not who she is. She's much more on the right hand side. And just because you have a different point of view, if you have a different point of view, take it offline.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think online, social media, text, whatever, it's really easy to forget that it's another person that you care about on the other end of that message. It's so impersonal.
Yeah, I actually would respectfully disagree with the take it offline. I think democracy is based on the idea that, like, we're going to have, like, a marketplace of ideas. I think the problem is more what you were saying, like, the all caps revolution, where people think that if you just shout loud enough, then your view is somehow, like, a better argument, or it makes more sense just because you shouted louder. Like, no, like, it still makes the same amount of sense whether you're loud about it or not. And I think people need to learn to, like, express their ideas respectfully. And I think Trump is basically a perfect example of that. Like, if you actually look into, like, the ideology of the Republican Party under Trump, like, it's pretty hollow in terms of what they actually believe and how their actions, like, line up with their stated beliefs. And they try to hide the hollowness with basically being loud, literally and figuratively. Like,
it's true.
All the things that the Republican Party supposedly stands for, like the free market, low taxes, checks and balances, all those are basically, like, being torn up under Trump. But they think if they're just loud enough, no one will
no one will like debate them on the actual merits and show how hollow their ideology actually is.
But I would take it back to what you said a few minutes ago, Matt, about you know, critical thinking and a lack of informed society. I still say, I'll call him by his name. We know that he is one of the
You can say his name. It's okay. Know that
he's president. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You want to?
Okay. He's not Voldemort.
No. Actually, I like Voldemort better, but. But he won the election by throwing out a lot of falsehoods, making a lot of claims, but that never would have happened if we had a more informed
Greg, I think the new population term for that is alternative facts.
Alternative facts. No, and I think that's been one of the things that's been our downfall. Because even when I do watch a lot of cable, or even just main, you know, the three
do
big broadcasting stations. No one ever calls out, like, that was a lie, that was a lie, that was a lie. They give it, they'll call it alternative facts, or he made a mistake, or he's misspoken again. No, there's a series of lies that have been told on the stump, or from the Oval Office, or from the Rose Garden. Now, I can name you 20 lies that were told in the past 5 days by this current president. That is a big issue. But the bigger issue to me is that you have, again, a population of people that are not as ill-informed, or I mean not as well-informed. We don't read as much. We don't look for the facts as much. So when you go into this all caps type of environment anymore, it's not based on anything. And the things that you do see on social media, they aren't really rooted in a whole lot of facts, or they're not rooted in anything that was really well developed and well, you know, determined, that was truly built out. So you're making these claims. And all we do, of course, we go online to our apps or whatever news feeds, and we catch the headline. That's all we need to know, and we run from there without having the facts. And I don't think this current president would be as successful. And not to say he was the founder of it, because it's been coming for, to me, my guess is about 20 plus years. But the fact that we aren't as well read as what we used to be, we don't take as much time to, like you say, really read the paper from cover to cover and go in it, you know, from top to bottom like we do, we're more likely to be susceptible to a lot of these falsehoods that are being thrown out. And that's what causes these two to take sides, because if you actually read all the information, you realize half the shit that you believe, wow, it's really not accurate. And the other side, let's just take it to the other side, or even us as progressives may look at it and go, a lot of stuff I believe too isn't truly rooted in fact.
Right.
And I think if we read and really had all facts, we'd say we have a lot more in common than what we do, than what we differ about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the bigger issues and why we've got this huge divide. Yes, social media is a big part of it, but I think part of it starts at home. As my dad used to say, charity starts at home. And if you educate yourself a little bit more, you'll find that it'll start to bleed over.
I should clarify, take it offline means. What I mean by that is I will literally, if I disagree with someone, because I also have to moderate a couple of Facebook pages, I don't block them. I open up a separate message and I say, okay, like, let me know what's going on, because I've had people who get into fights with one another, and I was like, listen, I understand what's happening, but let me know what the issue is. I'll try and resolve it. I don't mean take the article offline. You can keep out all you want. But rather than lose a 20-year friendship, I want to take whatever's going on and just say, hey, let's, like, not do this because we're friends, you know? And I think what's happened is people are like, well, I unfriended. And the thing is, I don't unfriend people on Facebook. I did one person. I unfriended them because they thought voting was stupid and that we deserve whatever happens to us. And that was the only person I unfriended. And that was the only time I've done that too. And other people I unfriend are like weirdos that I don't know. We actually had a conversation about this today.
Yeah.
But I don't unfriend people because of their political beliefs, unless they're like, no, there's not too many I would do that for. And I think that's uncommon, apparently, because we're like, oh, I have a family member, we're no longer friends. That's your uncle, though. So to me, that makes me upset.
Which is funny, because being on the far end, I guess, you know, clearly I'm the oldest one at the table now, so I'm a little, you know, deep into the Gen Xer. So social media and, you know, even Facebook, which I didn't get involved in until the 2016 election, because with all the activities, that was, for me, the fastest way to find out what was going on, what meetings, what activities, where do we want you to show up. So prior to that, hand on the Bible, I rarely, you know, went on Facebook. I had an account, also had a Twitter account, which I hadn't touched in about 4 years. So it was the presidential election that got me involved. So a lot of the things that people say, oh, I unfriended someone, I righteously had no idea that was offensive or an assault to a relationship. I didn't. So I still kind of struggle with, okay, big deal. If you would unfriend me on Facebook, I wouldn't take it personal. But apparently in today's world, that's an insult.
Really mad.
Right. That's a hot button. It's like a slap in the face, you know, or kick you in the shins.
Yeah, I've also hardly ever unfriended people on Facebook. Very, very rarely. And
you unfollow people?
I don't believe I have. By the way, I do agree. Like, sometimes it's just best to resolve some kind of dispute, whether it's a political dispute or interpersonal dispute. Sometimes, like, one and one is really the best way to do it. I was just trying to say, like, if we should be able to discuss, like, actual political ideas, whether that's healthcare or global warming online. So, yeah, it was just a misunderstanding.
I mean, I say go for it. I don't like it when I'm fine with that person and then someone else takes over my feed and then you've got Crazy Time USA happening and, like, they're so intolerant of each other's ideas. I mean, I've seen things online recently. I'll give you an example. So Gritty, right? The most lovable mascot right now in hockey. This page has been taken over by someone. It's such a weird, it's so hyper political, and it makes me laugh so much. It's like pro gun and anti gun Gritty memes. And it's like,
I mean, Gritty is pretty memeable.
It's interesting to me. And I'm like sitting there and I'm like, wow, I just didn't think that they took a stand, but hey, whatever you guys want to do. And it just makes me laugh a little bit. Like, I know it's very serious and I should be seriously thinking about gun control, but I was thinking, like, do our mascots even think about gun control?
I mean, maybe we can all agree that we all love Gritty. I mean, that's our common ground, right? No, you don't love Gritty.
You're going off the island.
I don't have a definite Gritty stance yet, but I'm definitely not comfortable saying I'm pro Gritty.
Yeah, I'd say the same.
Even Gritty is controversial.
I guess a little fringe of Gritty. Would you think that, though, that Gritty would be super into guns or anti-guns?
He's too young, right? He's brand new. He's only like a month old. Right. How can he be pro or con anything?
I'm like,
he's a result of his creator, I guess.
Yeah. It was
like Frankenstein.
So periodically, I'll send like the most insane memes. People get into political fights on the Gritty memes. I'm just like, oh my god. I mean, I'm not saying that people can't do that. I just find it kind of hilarious because I don't know about you guys. Sometimes I go to certain websites or Facebook pages where I just want to talk about AHA, maybe just for like a minute, or, you know, look at Gritty costumes from Halloween.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, or, you know, so yeah.
All right.
I also wanted to respond to what Greg was saying.
Yeah, go ahead. Is it about Gritty?
Unfortunately, I totally agree. Like, critical thinking is like extremely important. Critical thinking is just a fancy way of saying, like, don't believe everything you read. Which, believe it or not, a lot of people actually literally do believe everything they read.
We're very close to it.
So it's just a fancy way of teaching students not to believe everything they read, which is probably.
Want to look a little bit deeper, you know, read a little bit farther down the column. Keep going. Below the headlines.
Don't they hire students now for the data, like, to flag?
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they have a whole student program or something that they just hired. Again, I don't know. Please fact check me. But they just hired a bunch of students to help with the fact checking process.
Wow.
Cool. Like high school or?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, the Facebook, maybe you'll find this soon, but the Facebook process now to get permission to run political ads.
Oh, yes. I'm quite familiar with that.
That was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, you were talking about, like Donald Trump's, like, fact-free approach to campaigning or alternative fact-based campaigning. And that reminded me of, like, what an article I read went about Silvio Berlusconi of Italy. He was in some ways like a very Trump-like character in the way that he's a politician, but he's not treated as a politician, or he wasn't. He's not in power anymore. But when he was in power and when he was campaigning, he was basically treated as like a celebrity, a very controversial celebrity, but nonetheless a celebrity. And people would like run. They would have articles about like crazy parties at his house and crazy things he do on his TV stations, which I think he owned his own TV stations. And they basically treated him like as a scandal-prone celebrity, rather than like as a politician. And I think that there's like a lesson in that, which that like the only way we can actually hold like President Trump and politicians like Trump accountable is by basically treating him like a politician. If you treat him like a celebrity who does crazy things, then people, it would just be like a TV show that people watch, like, it's like a reality TV show that everyone's a part of, either willingly or unwillingly. And some people, I think, are very happy for their right to be a reality TV show. They just think it's like the Trump show. The only way you can actually hold them accountable is to treat them as a politician. Like, President Trump ran, like, during his campaign, he said, like, he went on 60 Minutes and said, we're going to give everybody health care and the government is going to pay. So if the government is going to pay for it. So if you treat Trump like a politician, then you say, well, you promised everyone free health care and it was going to be government supported. How come we don't all have free health care? And for traditional politicians, that's something they have to answer for in their next campaign. So if you instead of treating them as like a scandal, you treat them as a politician, maybe that would have different results.
Yeah,
we took over your podcast on.
Hey, you know what? This has been an awesome conversation.
I do want to circle back. I think the last excuse that I would like to talk about, because you know we're very close. It's only 2 days away. The weather forecast is probably pretty accurate at this point, and it's looking like there's going to be quite a bit of rain on Tuesday. And Matt started us off with his public service announcement about how nobody's going to melt due to the rain. But let's talk about, you know, that excuse. So, well, the weather's not good. I'm too busy. You know, whatever. How do we counter that? What do we say to those people?
Give them an umbrella.
Yeah.
And ponchos. Get an umbrella.
There are numbers.
And canopies.
The Lyft is free or discounted. Call me. Yeah. Don't really call me. But
well, Crystal's gonna personally drive around the city and pick
people
up.
No, I don't have a car.
Oh, that's
but
gonna
I
be hard
only have people that I know.
Yeah, I'll get you there.
You know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous to me because we have such good public transportation in the city, but also the most people's polling places are less than 10 minutes away, 5 minutes away. I heard someone today when they were doing, asking them where their polling place was, and it was next door. I mean, the last primary election, there was a rainstorm, and we only had 17%.
Yep.
So I am well aware of how weather affects us. But then 2016, we had beautiful weather. So I'm hoping, and then there's places like in Georgia right now where they have to, like, it's super far away in the middle of, like, rural America, and they find a way to get there.
They do.
They find a way.
Yeah.
And if you need a way, we've got a number.
So I don't think it's the weather per se. I think, like you said, the weather's the symptom. It's not the problem. I think the weather is just one more excuse because, quite frankly, a lot of people are not activated. They're not, you know, excited. Whatever, for whatever reason, if they don't have that, you know, that mojo or that jonesing for that one candidate, or there's no hot button issue that directly, you know, affects them that makes them want to, you know, get out of bed in the morning or, you know, go straight from work to the polls. But I think that's where we have to come in. I've always said in a lot of cases, you have to meet people where they are. So if their issue is X, if, you know, whatever that issue could be, then you've got to find that and you've got to make that their hot button that's going to make them, you know, go to the poll and find out what that reason is.
Yeah.
Or as be the best we can, if we're representing that one candidate, you know, i.e., Beth Finn, who it is, then we have to be the best surrogate or the voice for Beth when we're talking to individuals to make sure that people are excited enough or they believe in what she's doing enough to actually get up, you know, and go out and go to the polls and not be deterred by rain, hail, snow, or great sunny weather that's, you know, 65 degrees with a nice breeze to it, because they'll use that as an excuse too. Mm-hmm. It's too pretty outside. I'd rather go to the park, or I'd rather go, you know, and play ball because it's so nice. I don't want to stand in line for 30 minutes.
Yeah. My counter to the rain argument is this, right? You can't decide you're not going to go to work one day because it's raining. And I think it is your job as an American, as a citizen, to go and vote. It happens 2 times a year and it doesn't take that long. I know some polling places have really long lines, but you know what? There will be volunteers like us there to hand out candy and snacks and whatever to you while you're standing in line if you are there. And because that's what we do to make sure our democracy works the way it should. It's your job to go and vote. And you wouldn't call in sick to work. Well, you might call in sick to work if it's raining. But the truth is, you got to go to work if it's raining. Got to go to the polls if it's raining.
Yeah. I mean, in some countries, voting is mandatory. And in theory, maybe not in practice, but in theory, you could be like fined or arrested or something if you don't do it. So you should just be glad that we only require voting here through social norms.
We can put that on the ballot.
I think Greg is right. You better keep voting to make sure we don't decide to make it mandatory.
Yeah. There we go.
Actually, I have a really sort of sweet story from the Hillary campaign about this. We sent a camera for her out, and he like took 2.5 hours to get back. And we're like, what happened? Because this guy was like really good at canvassing. And I have the picture somewhere online. And he's like, I'm really sorry I'm late. I had to help this man walk to the polls. This man had to have been like 75 or 80, and he had like a lot of physical disabilities. And he literally held this man's hand and walked him. It took him an hour and a half to walk him both ways.
Wow.
And this guy was so excited to vote that's what it took. And I'm like, if that guy who was 75 held someone's hand with a cane, by the way, to vote and come back, you can take the 10 or the 20 minutes to do it. And I've said it before, people have literally died, like not even like figuratively, but actually died for you to vote. And that is the very least you can do for your ancestors.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's a good point.
We also had at this very office just recently, a woman came in, and because she needed an absentee ballot, and it was after the original deadlines, she had to go to the county courthouse to file for a special last-minute absentee ballot the same day she was flying across the country. So if she can take the time to do that, because voting is that important that she's going to go to the courthouse to do it, then you can take the time to fit it into your schedule. But I think we can also do more to make it easier as a state to vote, because our state pretty much is pretty behind on making voting easy in a lot of ways. For example, I had a guy tell me that I think he was basically either working or at home with his kids all day, maybe at both at the same time, and he said he wouldn't have any time to go to the polls. So on the one hand, like, you can hire a babysitter and he can probably hire a babysitter for an hour. But on the other hand, like, we can make it a lot easier in our state to vote. Like, we can make it so that you can have an absentee ballot without having to be out of town or without having to be sick. We can give everyone an absentee ballot.
Or early voting?
Yeah.
A lot of states have early voting.
Or a national holiday?
Yep. In Pennsylvania, we have 13 hours to vote.
And we all know this is not by accident or by chance, or it's not, you know, they don't have the capability for it. This is always by design. I mean, again, we know that certain parties tend to benefit with a low voter turnout. And I should say that that's on both sides. I mean, you will hear a lot of candidates who will tell you the truth, or politicians will tell you that they do better when there is a low voter turnout. So a lot, I shouldn't say parties, a lot of politicians are pretty happy with the status quo. So for those who are saying the system is rigged, to a point it's rigged, but you can fix it. And one thing you can do is, quite frankly, like you said, start at the bottom, and number one, make it easier to actually cast a ballot. You shouldn't have to, like you said, block out or look at one day and 13-hour window to be able to get out.
Do you want to have Georgia here? Because we could. I mean, Georgia, someone just overturned that ruling. Mm-hmm. So now people who are not being allowed to vote because they had an extra space in their name can finally vote. And this is kind of what this feels like, except we don't talk about it because we're up north. But it's basically the same thing. Yeah. You know, God forbid that you have kids or you have to work a 12-hour shift, like you're a nurse or something like that. You know, we had one today or yesterday where it was very confusing about if the polling location had been moved, because you get the certification that it's moved by mail.
Well, think about it. If you have an hour commute to work, which I think you and I had, Beth, at some point in our careers. Again, if you need to be at work at 8, you need to leave the house at 7, period. Well, polls open at what time? 7 a.m. And for those of us who don't clock in and out and you work a pretty long day, if the polls close at 8, and most of us don't leave work at 5 or sometimes 5:30 or even 6, you better barrel it out of there if you want to get here, get to the polls before they actually close. So you're already at a disadvantage. And I know, oh, yeah, those middle-class people problems. But that is a big issue. You've got a lot of middle-class people. They've got kids at home. They've got, you know, a long commute ahead of them. They've got a million other things they got to do in between those two, you know, periods between work and family. And it shouldn't be relegated just to a 13-hour window. There's no reason, you know, like you said, on God's green earth, that this state should not have early voting or, quite frankly, weekend voting. Like, the polls could be open on Saturdays and Sundays.
Again, we're not, again, this is a very commutable part of Pennsylvania. But again, if you're in Western Pennsylvania and your polling place, like, what if your car's broken down? Like, I know it sounds very, like, but I'm telling you, there aren't a lot of lifts out
there. No, I used to drive an hour to work, so, and I was there at 8. So I left the house at 7.
Right.
So it was always a, hey, guys, I'm going to be late, get in the office because I'm going to go vote today.
Yeah.
And if I had a big meeting, then it was a, you know, it was a, sometimes it was a big issue. Or same thing on election day. It's like, I got to get out of here at 6
p.m.
Or I can't stay or work late. Or if I'm traveling, if I'm out, you know, again, if I'm going to be out of state on election day.
And I think, I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that if you're going to be out of town for part of the day, even if you're only like going to work in King of Prussia, that still counts as being out of town. So I believe you could still apply for an absentee ballot. You might
You could have.
Yeah, too late now. You might have to check on that. But
but
bottom line is Pennsylvania can do a lot more to make voting easier. Mm-hmm. I've also run into people, and one person I've been having like multiple phone conversations with, where basically the root issue is just that Pennsylvania it has such a early deadline for voter registration. I'm like a big fan of voter registration. I don't track the number of doors I knock, but I do track the number of voter registrations I do. And that's one of my favorite things to do. But because
How many did you do this year, Matt? You got to check. I put him on the spot.
He's a total numbers guy, so he's got them there.
I have to check on my phone. But,
all right.
But basically, 26.
That's awesome.
26
newly registered voters.
Before the deadline. Last year was 62, a tower number.
Wow. That's awesome.
But not 2016. 2016 or 62. That's before the deadline.
Yeah.
And then like I register people after the deadline, and then you know, sometimes they're like they're very disappointed that they're not able to vote, understandably. And then other states have like same day registration, which it turns out is actually pretty easy to do, because all you have to do is basically give them a provisional ballot, register them day of, and then once you check the registration, you can then count your provisional ballot. So it may sound, how do you do it same day? But it's actually pretty simple.
Just have it at 18.
Automatic voter registration.
Some people don't actually register to vote because they think that they're going to have to go to court, like to do trial duty. I've heard that multiple times. Like, I don't want to vote because then I'll have to go to trial jury, and I was like jury duty, and I had to talk my office person, not like a coworker, that I said, like, you have to go vote.
Yeah.
Well, I had to go to jury duty. I'm like, no, they already have your name and number.
That's correct. The jury duty pool is based on voter registration, but
it's based on other things too.
Driver's licenses.
I'm not sure about that.
No, it is. They've expanded not just. They used to be that, but they've expanded it now.
Well, and look, jury duty is part of our obligation as a citizen anyway, right?
Yeah, you know, the main point, regardless of what it's based on, that's your civic duty. And like again, like just like if you don't vote and like you're letting other people decide things about your life, if you don't serve on jury duty, you're basically letting other people interpret the law, and eventually it's going to affect you.
Yeah. And then you'll have that person judging you. God forbid you ever have to be on trial.
That's true.
Yep.
All right, so friends, this has been way more incredible than I could have possibly imagined. You guys have such wonderful insights into so many things. I can't wait to go back and listen to this. Let's, I think real quick, I want to close out and everybody share your last words of advice or your last plea to motivate people to get out and vote on Tuesday, like 2 minutes or less.
Oh, wow. 2 minutes. You had me until you said 2 minutes.
All right. Take as much time as you want, Greg.
No,
I can't use bribery, but no. I do have really cute photos of my cat that I will share after to you on November 7th.
Okay, so no cute cat photos until November 7th when you vote. When you vote on November 6th. Yeah.
Maybe.
All right.
Maybe, because federal elections are a little strange, because you're not supposed to give out free coffee or all that kind of stuff, so don't do that.
Well, you're not telling them who to vote for, you're just saying go vote.
Right.
So that's allowed.
So cute cat photos, I think, are allowed.
Yeah.
I will give you one of my patented high fives.
Okay.
My high fives are legendary.
So you send Crystal a picture of you voting or with your I voted sticker, and she will send you cute cat photos.
Or high five you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For me, I struggle because I want to be very, very big picture and say, okay, you want to be on the right side of history. You know, I want to go down that road with that one. And then I want to say, okay, this current administration needs some type of check and balance, which is part of our Constitution. But I don't know if that'll sway a lot of people there. So I try to keep it very, very local. And I think it does go back to if you want to have that pothole fixed, if you want to have that street lamp. I mean, there are a lot of local issues right here in Philadelphia. I mean, this city is growing by leaps and bounds. But if you don't actually get involved in the political process, you'll get left behind because we will find ourselves, I think we talked about it yesterday, we will look like Manhattan or San Francisco. You will have an incredible city, but it will only be available to those, quite frankly, who are, you know, the wealthy. Because, again, housing prices will go through the roof if we don't put some type of check on that. We'll find ourselves that we can't afford to, you know, keep your kids into a decent school because all the schools will be catered towards, you know, either private-based schools or zoned to, again, the more affluent neighborhoods. So if you really want to have some type of impact in that, you want to put a quite frankly, a check on the way the city is going to be run, I think this is where you've got to start voting. And if you look at it from a party line, I'm going to be very blatant. If you look at the way the Democratic Party is going, is that originally they started off as a party of the people, the working class, the working poor, the middle class individuals, and most pretty much covered everyone from soup to nuts in terms of ethnicities, gender, the whole nine. If you look at where it was, I'd say from the 1940s onward, this has been the party that's pretty much been the voice of most people that look like those who are listening to this podcast. So just keep it local and try to put a check on Philadelphia and, you know, go out and vote and make sure that as the city grows, you're going to be a part of this, the growth of the city, not be on the outside looking in.
Oh, and record amount of women are running this year.
Yeah.
So who doesn't, how many women? How many women are there currently in the PA?
In the congressional race, I think there are zero.
There are zero in our current congressional delegation.
Yeah.
But in the current race,
zero.
We've got, is it?
We could have, I think, we could have up to 8 from Pennsylvania, or maybe it's 11 from Pennsylvania. We could have
8 if they all
win. Yeah, if they all win, yeah. We could have 8 women.
I know there's at least one guaranteed. I don't know how many the minimum is.
Yeah, there is one race
one.
That has a woman running on
yeah,
both tickets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Mm. But think about that. We're like more than half. We're actually women vote more than, we vote more than men, statistically.
Yeah. Well, and we're more than half the population, too.
Right. And we, you know, take care of you. You know, we take care of your kids.
Yeah.
You know, we also give good high fives as well. But I'm just saying, if you want more women.
I'm going to need to get one of these high fives, Crystal.
I'm
definitely voting. But I'll wait till Tuesday when I come in with my sticker.
Oh, we could Rocky Horror in, too.
Yeah. All right, so Matt, what's your last plea to get people to vote on Tuesday?
Yeah, so I'll go with the quick answer is Trump sucks, and if you're not totally sure, I would urge you to go to a grocery store and buy an actual newspaper. You can tell it's a newspaper and not cable news because it's just made of paper and it has news on it. And I'd really recommend you read that.
But not like the National Enquirer, right? It's probably not.
It's not
news.
Glossy. It's just regular paper.
It's matte.
Rub off on your fingers.
A few pictures, but not too many.
If there's ink, then it's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a quick answer. The longer answer is we have a lot of serious problems to solve in this country. I'll just name global warming as one example, but there's a lot more on the list. And hopefully, Trump will be gone by January 2021 at the very latest. Then Pennsylvania is about to elect a senator who will be in office through January 2025, most likely. So that will give us 4 years where we can work on serious problems in this country and have respectful debates about how to solve those problems. So Trump will hopefully be long gone, and we'll still have a senator solving problems on behalf of us. So the midterms matter because the senator is going to be in office for the next 6 years, and people both locally and nationally are representing you in like critical areas of your life.
Yeah. All right, and then I guess I will close it out. My plea for why you should vote, why I think you should be motivated to vote, is that if you're not voting, all those other people who are voting are making the decision for you. And I think the worst thing you can do is give up your voice and your personal franchise. I think that your vote is your voice. And when you're letting other people decide, you don't know what they're going to choose for you, right? You're the one who has your best interests at heart. So get out there and vote on Tuesday, regardless of the weather, regardless of what else is going on. Make sure you get to those polls for between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. If you're in line by 8 p.m., you can vote. So don't get out of line, no matter what anybody tells you. I think Crystal mentioned this before. I want to mention the voter suppression hotline number.
804.
Oh, so this is if you need a ride to the polls. A ride to the polls, you can call 804-424-5335. Or you can go to carpoolvote.com and you can sign up. That's to either give a ride or get a ride. And then if you have any trouble at the polls, here's the number you can call in Pennsylvania. If you have questions about voting, anything like that, it's 717-596-0800. Or you can go to padems.com/vote and get the information you need there.
And nationally, you can call 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-VOTE.
Yeah, that's right. So Matt, Crystal, Greg, and Jack, who had to leave, thank you guys so much for joining me today. This was such a big experiment, but I think it turned out great.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah. No,
it was fun. Give me one of those high fives.
Oh, awesome. Damn it. That was a Crystal high five. So awesome.
That's something
first. One more. All right. All right. Everybody go vote. Thank you guys for being here.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to See Beth Run. Special thanks to local singer-songwriter Avi Wisnia, who graciously provides the music for this podcast. I'm Beth Finn, first-time candidate for Philadelphia City Council at Large. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and anywhere you get your podcasts. If you like what you've heard, don't forget to leave a review and check me out online at www.beth4phl.com and on social media at Beth4phl. That's Beth 4 PHL. See you next time.